From Comerica Park to Jackson Field, we've got the sports opinions that matter to you. From the Driven Collision Studios, we make friends by accident. On the game, 7:30 a.m.
The views and positions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the views and positions of the game 7:30 a.m. Some may find the content of this program controversial or offensive.
Time to play the game.
Maybe right. Put on your big boy pants and buckle up. This isn't a safe space for weak takes or whining. You can say that this sports radio show is offensive-minded. Call the show at 517-300-4263. Text or call us through the game, 7:30 a.m. app. Message the game, 7:30 a.m. on Facebook.
Guess who's back? Back again.
Beanie's back.
Tell a friend.
Here's your host and professional hellraiser, Beanie Howell.
Welcome in. It's Offensive Minded. I'm Beanie, and this is Lansing's only sports radio station. The game, 7:30 a.m. So glad to have you with us as we kickstart another week here. Let me take care of some business before we dive in. It's the Monday tradition here on Offensive Minded. Studs and duds. A chance for you to win a prize, too, just by nominating one good and one bad performance from the weekend that was in sports. Everyone who does that will be entered into a random drawing we'll conduct at the end of today's show. One of you walks away with a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House in downtown Lansing. Thanks to the Nut House for making that possible. Okay, so here are the ways to do it. Here's the way to get your studs and duds into the show and to participate. Phone line 517-300-4263. You can email the show. That's Beanie at WVFNAM.com. You can use Facebook. Send us a message or post a comment. Search Facebook for The Game 7:30 AM to do that. Or use the free Game 7:30 AM app. Click chat in the main menu. Sends over a free text message to us. And that'll get you into the studs and duds drawing as well. Okay, so we'll do that all show today, per usual, here on Offensive Minded. Hi, Dr. J. How was your weekend?
How was yours?
Say that again.
I said, it was all right. How was yours?
I don't know, like football misery on Saturday. and then yesterday, just a lame day. Yeah, I did at least I had a good time doing nachos and kneecaps with Brock. That was great. But then afterwards, I spent the rest of the day in a combination between the urgent care and emergency room. So that's fun.
Yikes. Okay.
I wasn't suffering, but you know, I had this nagging, like dull, aching pain in my lower right abdomen, which obviously, if you still have your appendix, if you ever have that feeling and it's lasting for a few days, that's, you know, you're worried, oh, is my appendix about to explode and give me septic shock? So that was, of course, what I was thinking. It had been going on for a couple of days. So we went to a local urgent care, had a wonderful experience there, and got eventually referred to the emergency room, went there. That was fine. It's just, you know, that's not what was going on, at least not yet. So basically, it's very frustrating to spend a bunch of time, waste a bunch of time, and really a bunch of money. Healthcare is incredibly expensive, you know, even with health insurance. But just, you know, frustrating to waste all that time. And it's, you basically get just told, okay, well, keep an eye on it. Because that's the result I got. All right, well, keep an eye on it. Okay.
That's not helpful.
I mean, I'm happy.
I mean, that's the best they could do, obviously.
I'm happy to know my appendix isn't ruptured or on the verge of rupturing because I got the CAT scan and everything to indicate that. That's good. So, I don't know, just frustrating, though, to not get conclusion out of it. But it feels better today.
Good.
So, and by the way, I'm not someone who thinks I know better than doctors. I'm not one of those. Like, oh, this guy's a quack. My appendix is about to explode. No. I trust them. That's not what I'm frustrated about. I'm just frustrated you invest all that time and waste a whole day practically. I missed so much football on Sunday.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to cost a fortune, even with health insurance. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Just to...
Well, the Lions won at least.
Yeah. Yeah, made me look smart because I picked them. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway... Let's. You asked me how I was, so that little tangent is your fault. I blame you. Let's start with what most people are tuning in to hear about. My weekend. Besides that, no, I'm kidding. Michigan State Rutgers. I don't think I have ever seen what happened at the end of that game. I don't think I have ever before Saturday. I had not ever seen a team blow an 18-point lead in less than 5 minutes of gameplay and then go three and out and let the other team who just pulled off that very hasty comeback run the final 7 minutes off the clock. I have never seen that. That was such a diametric shift in fortunes and so fast and immediate. I don't think I've ever seen a game turn completely 180 like that. It goes from Michigan State was just having its way with Rutgers and was thoroughly in command for three quarters. And then the last quarter was the exact opposite, but even on a more dominant level for Rutgers, overcoming the 18 points again in less than 5 minutes of gameplay and then running the final 7 minutes out. I don't think I have ever seen that. That is that a new low for this program? I don't know. For some reason, to me, it still doesn't feel as bad as like 2002, for example. Although there's a lot of similarities. You know, the team is listing aimlessly. The coach got fired, although for very different things. It still doesn't feel that bad, but it is awfully reminiscent of the John L. era. I don't know, man. Is this rock bottom? Have we hit it yet? I don't know. I just know it's a bad thing when your team keeps innovating new destructive ways of losing. This is what Lions fans complained of for decades. But it sounds like I'm joking. They are truly innovative. Truly. This is three straight games now. Michigan State has outplayed its opponent for a vast majority of the game and still lost. And by the way, lost all of those by double digits except for this one on Sunday or Saturday. Isn't that bizarre? I mean, and then you look at like the fourth quarter numbers, the total yardage. Rutgers had, you know, triple digit total yardage. State had -2 yards in the fourth quarter. The plays were something like Rutgers ran like 30 plays in the fourth quarter. State ran three, right? The three and out. And that was like it, right? Or 2-3 and outs. And that was it. So, man, just a new low. I had never seen something like that. How fast it all turned and how thoroughly it all flipped. And when I was thinking about that, obviously the fans are ready to have a pound of flesh from the interim staff here, and that's totally warranted. They completely screwed the pooch. And there's plenty to get into there. But when I really sit back and think about it, who's responsible for that epic collapse at Rutgers Saturday? One person. Mel Tucker. And no, not because, well, he sent this program into a tailspin. I mean, it wasn't in, let's just say the program health wasn't great before the scandal. But think about it. And I'm not just pinning it on Tucker because this whole season has gone to bleep because of the scandal. No. Think about it. It is all his fault. And I can point to one specific event in the game that changed the complexion of it and ultimately what wound up happening. And that was the screwed up punt. That screwed up punt is what completely flipped the momentum and script of that game. And from that point on, that was, you could just feel it. That was the opening of the floodgates. And why did that happen? How did Michigan State have a bad snap on that punt that led to the recovery for Rutgers and the score? Well, that happened because State's long snapper, Hank Pepper, has entered the transfer portal. And so now a new person is making the long snaps. And that's happening because the head coach is gone. Ergo, connect the dots, it all boils down to Tucker in way more ways than one. But I'm talking just in the low altitude look, the hyper specific, in the micro. It was all going back to Tucker. Of course, everyone's going to say that in the macro. But I'm telling you, that whole game, it's Tucker's fault. It all changed on a bad snap from the long snapper. And the only reason that kid is in the game is because Tucker so spectacularly self-destructed. It all boils down to him. And he left us with this smoldering pile of excrement. Not that it was going to be in great shape with him in charge anyway. But thinking about that, you know, controlling for circumstances, like it's hard to do. It's hard to try to deal in the hypothetical. Well, if Tucker were still the head coach, what would this team look like? So what are they right now? 2-4, right? 2-4, Dr. J, isn't that right? I think so. I don't know. It's all such a blur to me.
I'm pretty sure that's right.
Let me double check before we move on. I want to make sure of that. Why is the, I don't even, oh, there it is. Yes, they're 2-4. 2-4, 0-3 in the Big Ten. Right, okay. So what would their record be if he were still the coach? I think at least 3-3. They wouldn't have lost that game. They wouldn't have lost at Rutgers. Would they have won in Iowa? Maybe. I don't think they win the Maryland game, even though they outplayed them for a large portion of that game. So maybe a one-game difference. It doesn't make that big of a difference. But I think that all boiled down to him. It changed on a bad long snap. Wouldn't have happened if the coach had not so brilliantly self-immolated. And despite that, you know, you can see Michigan State's better than Rutgers. You can see it. By the way, Rutgers has a good defense. I think we can agree. I was talking about that on the tailgate show ahead of time. It looked like what they had done over the balance of half a season. We had six games to look at for them to that point, and they had played pretty well. They went on the road to Wisconsin the week before and only surrendered 17 points as a defense. The other seven Wisconsin scored was off of a pick six. But State's better than them. You could see it. Even with all of this going on, State was still better than them. Even still, despite all the embarrassment and this spectacular losing innovation, I still think it was worth it. I think this was all worth it. Despite the suffering we're going through, and how awful that was Saturday in the last game at Iowa. And really, you know, the last two full seasons, how awful it's all been. I still find myself happy that Mel Tucker Hurry curried himself professionally here. Because think about it. You get to hit the reset button for free, if state's legal counsel is right, that is. We get to end this failed Tucker experiment way early. And now you get time to try to find the right guy the right way this time. With enough time to do it adequately. I still think that's worth it. I'm not a big moral victory or silver linings guy, but for those of you who are, there's this. It looks like you have something to work with in Kate and Hauser. That's a nice development. Did not see that coming. I thought it was going to be a train wreck for him. I thought it was going to go really poorly because Rutgers has a pulse defensively. And on top of that, the weather. It was rainy and nasty. But no, the kid came out there and acquitted himself quite well. And you can see why, you know, he was such a highly touted quarterback recruit, why he was an Elite 11 QB. And you can see why Michigan State's staff went into a full court recruiting press to get him and like rolled out the red carpet to him. If you remember that, remember those stories about how when he came on one of his official visits, like the entire coaching staff was like lined up in the tunnel, I guess, like on the other side, clapping for him and stuff. It was very bizarre to read. It read like a piece of North Korea propaganda, but you can see why he's got the goods. We already knew he looked the part, 6'3", 215 or whatever it is. Noah Kim doesn't look like a Division I college football quarterback. Hauser does, and then his play acquitted it. 18 for 29, just 133 yards, but two touchdowns. He didn't throw a pick, so impressive to me. I thought he was going to come out and turn the ball over like crazy. Now, they wind up doing that anyway, but not because of him throwing directly to the other team. So you got something to work with there. By the way, speaking of Kaden Hauser, I'm going to need a full congressional select committee to be formed to conduct an investigation into how Kaden Hauser lost the QB battle to Noah Kim in fall camp. How did that happen? What did or didn't transpire to cause them to go with Noah Kim? I can't figure it out. I highly doubt Kaden Hauser has made huge strides in the 6 weeks since then, right? And remember, Noah Kim had the job won like with a week or two left in camp. We found that out after the fact. How? None of it makes any sense to me. Especially when you consider not just how the kid played this weekend and then compare that to how Noah Kim played all season, but also comparing that to, factoring in this, that Kaden Hauser was this regime's guy. Noah Kim was a vestige of the D'Antonio era. Well, coaches usually want their guys to pan out. And plus, you know, Kaden Hauser losing the job at least lended more probability to him potentially transferring, right? And you losing that big-time quarterback get as a redshirt freshman. So I just don't know how it happened. Someone's going to have to dig. I need a full-blown federal investigation into that. That surprised you, Dr. J, how well he played?
Yeah, I wonder if maybe Kim has regressed a little bit. That would be the only explanation for me as to how he won it and then did so poorly. Or Tucker was trying to self-destruct the team as well.
Whoa, so self-sabotage?
Yeah.
Why? He hadn't been outed yet.
I don't know. That's the only explanation I can come up with, though.
Huh. Maybe we haven't given enough consideration to the sabotage, the self-sabotage option. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Because he did it to his career. Why not the team?
Hey, look, if he wanted to bring this whole thing down on his way out, then he's got to be pretty satisfied. Because basically, since it all happened, it has been nothing but sheer abject failure and embarrassment. I mean, we really got to scrounge for things to feel good about. But Kaden Hauser's one of them, so there's that. I don't know. I don't have a ton of thoughts to... I don't really have a bunch to go over with that game. It boils down to, obviously, yes, this coaching staff is... It's like a professional clown networking event. That's what's going on the sidelines all the time for Michigan State now. And someone, go ahead, Dr. J, what did you want to say?
I would describe it as hot garbage.
Thank you for adding to the broadcast there. That was very necessary. You really added some depth and context and breadth to the discussion.
It's important.
You know, that Jay Johnson and Scotty Hazleton have been firmly in the crosshairs of this fan base for a while, and especially recently, and deservedly so. And we've talked about this in the past. One guy who always gets off scot clean, at least until very recently, was Chris Kapilovic, the highest paid offensive line coach in the country, because they've had just an awful offensive line for basically this entire era. But I think there's one guy who is taking even less grief than him when he deserves maybe even more, and that's special teams coordinator Ross Ells. I mean, State special teams have been a mess for a while. Having the game's best punter for the last few years coming in, or, you know, until after last year, that covered up some of the stink. It was a nice deodorant. He's gone now. I don't understand. How can you suspect a team that just cut an 18-point deficit down to 3 with 8.5 minutes left to kick an onside kick? I don't know why, but he did, and he had stayed out there in an onside kick recovery formation. Well, that's a fireable offense in a vacuum. That's just incredibly incompetent. And then what's Tyrell Henry doing? He's treating the kickoff like a punt. He just watches it hit the ground. And then as Rutgers guys are just coming full speed down the field, closing in on the ball, it's like Tyrell Henry, his blood must have turned cold and he realized, oh, wait, that's a live ball. So he goes to get it off the rebound. And of course, you know, more circus act. You know, just complete disaster. Rutgers recovers. First play, handoff. Kyle Manunga, who owns Michigan State the way Aaron Rodgers owns the Bears. 21 yards, practically untouched. And Rutgers takes the lead. Never gives it back. State goes three and out. And Rutgers bleeds the last 7 minutes off the clock. Just incredible. Like, impressive levels of incompetence. I don't know how else to describe it. But this staff, we talked about on the tailgate show, will anyone be retained by the next regime? Highly doubt it. And if there is one, it would probably be Courtney Hawkins. And I could see that, and I would be fine with that. He's young. You know, he's recruited and developed a couple of good receivers. I get that he went to school here. That seems to be a prerequisite, at least with the fan base. Well, and the institution, too. But aside from that, the rest of them, these guys need to be rounded up and launched into the sun. And I guarantee you, not one of them will find Power 5 work. For those of them who don't have to take a year off or whatever next year, I guarantee you not one of them will be on a Power 5 staff. And we can hang this up on the wall in the bulletin board and we can revisit it in a few months if you want. Fine. You can hold me accountable for that. But these guys, these are almost to a man. These guys are career charlatans. Look at this mess. Wow. I mean, at least John L. Smith, his offenses could cook. As much as you may have hated Dave Baldwin and not running the ball in a rainstorm, they scored a lot of points. They put up some yards. They disappeared at the worst times, sure. Damn. And now, look, we have to shift gears into what was supposed to be and usually is supposed to be, you know, one of the most fun times of year, the rivalry week. And I got to tell you, tell me if I'm wrong, Dr. J or anyone else, but this strikes me as the most unanticipated meeting between Michigan and Michigan State as long as I can remember, even 2002. The infamous 49-3 game in Ann Arbor where Bobby Williams was asked if he lost the team and he infamously said, I don't know. And he got fired for that. Not that he wasn't going to get fired anyway, but that just hastened the process. I think this is least, this is even less enticing and enthusing than that. Can you remember a time, Dr. J, where there was less excitement for this game?
No, and it's not even excitement, it's dread. This is the most dread I've ever felt going into this game.
And rightfully so, because, you know, they're a train wreck. And Michigan's not. Michigan's really, really good. And by the way, Michigan is now officially the national champion odds-on favorite at many sports books with the news today that Georgia's all-world tight end and maybe the best overall player in college football, Brock Bowers, likely out for the season after suffering an ankle injury that requires surgery. Yeah, it's just, it's a perfect storm of awful for us. This is going to sound like a bit, but it's not. I honestly wish we could all just feign COVID and get out of playing this game like Harbaugh and Michigan did when they ducked Ohio State in the 2020 year because they knew Ryan Day wanted to hang 100. Can we do that? Can we have someone? We need to do our part. Do your part, Spartan Nation. Find someone who has COVID and then send them to the Duffy Doherty building.
Can we just forfeit? What if we don't have a reason? We just say, hey, we can't do this. Please. Please don't make us do this.
Well, I don't know how that works. What are the rules surrounding a forfeit? Do you have to present a reason? Does there have to be paperwork validating it? I don't know. I would not be opposed. I think it's worth investigating.
What if just nobody shows up?
They just don't show up that day?
Yeah, they just don't come. They don't go there.
I don't know. I wonder what would happen. Hey, it's worth trying.
I think that that's fair, and I would fully support that decision. And, you know, if it would help to have no fans there, I'm good with that too. If everybody just did not go on campus this Saturday.
Just treat it like, oh, it's a bye week.
Right, it's a bye.
It practically is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder what would happen. Can we do it? Is it like also in the MHSAA, and maybe this has changed, but it used to be when a team in Michigan high school football forfeited, it only counted as a 2-0 loss.
Oh, okay.
I would gladly take that. I will take the shutout loss by 2 points.
Yeah.
I will gladly take that.
Because it's going to be a bloodbath, right? If they do go out there and play, it's going to be a bloodbath.
The line opened for books who didn't have a look ahead line. The line opened Sunday at Michigan laying 23.5. I see that's been bet up to 24.5 at mini books. What?
I said, of course. I just want to sleep through it. I want to pretend it's not happening.
Sleeping through it like Harlan Barnett and all of his coaches. Yeah, look, if there's any silver lining here, again, for the moral victory crowd, maybe it's that Michigan will humiliate us so bad in our own house, under the lights, on national, is it Peacock? I think it is, on NBC/Peacock, that Alan Haller will be forced to fire all of these bums pretending to be coaches afterward. And I know that won't make a difference, but look, I need a pound of flesh. These guys are such frauds.
Yeah.
But to that end, look, I'll be real with you. I hope Michigan makes it hurt. I hope they twist the knife. I hope they can do what they wanted to do last year, but were unable to, which is run the score up well over the point spread. You know, Michigan last year was still running like trick plays and stuff in the fourth quarter when they were up 22 points. I hope they keep the foot on the gas the whole game. I hope they make it bad. Because the people in charge need to recognize the train wreck they've presided over.
Mm, yes.
Maybe if it's bad enough, it will light a fire under the asses of the people who need a fire lit under their asses into doing whatever it takes to making this a winning program. And we all have different ideas of what that may be, whatever. whatever you may think it is, I think despite our differing opinions on how to get there, a big majority of us don't feel confident in them doing what's necessary to get there, right? We think they're too incompetent.
Yep.
Maybe Michigan could help us. Maybe Michigan could put such an all-time ass-whipping on this team on Saturday that it moves the hand and it somehow creates some harmony within the many layers of bureaucracy necessary to get this thing back on the tracks. That's the only hope I have for this game. Everything else is just immaterial.
How many points would it take?
I don't know.
Like how thoroughly would they have to destroy us?
I don't know. But if Michigan puts up more than 50 points in Spartan Stadium, I think that's a good start.
Okay.
And just watching the two teams play, I mean, doesn't it seem like it has all the hallmarks of a 50-something to 10 game?
I don't think we're going to score a single point. Maybe I think it's going to be a shutout. They're going to score like 70.
That would probably do it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
If they do what the Dolphins did to the Broncos a few weeks ago and hit 70.
Yeah, that's what I'm envisioning.
The difference is the Dolphins had mercy and stopped trying to just pile on points at the end. I don't think Michigan's going to do that, and frankly, they shouldn't. And I hope they don't. I want them to make this as bad as possible. For one, for punitive purposes, because the people in charge deserve to have that on their resume. And for two, that might be the only positive development out of it, that they pound Michigan State's lifeless corpse so far into the Spartan Stadium turf that it somehow awakens the competency deep down, if there is any, inside of the people in charge here in East Lansing. That's all I can look for positivity-wise. Outside of that, what reason is there to, like, if you have tickets to this game, why are you going? People are already debating if they should sell their tickets to Michigan fans or not. Like, is that an okay thing to do? Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
For all you pay to get those seats in your quote-unquote mandatory donation you have to make before you can even have the right to pay through the nose for those tickets, this is America. You can do whatever the hell you want with them. They belong to you. Sell them to whomever. I don't think it makes you a bad Spartan or whatever if you sell them to Michigan fans. You could use that to voice your protest for how terribly inept this thing has been managed. They're yours to do with as you please. Now, if you can't bring yourself to do it, hey, that's your business. I personally enjoy money. And I would have no problem selling my tickets to a Michigan fan because, A, I like money, and B, I would be the kind of person, I'm a very bitter person. We've talked about this a lot. I'm a miserable, bitter person.
Yes.
I would love to use the sale of my season tickets for the Michigan game to Michigan fans as a way to give Haller and the rest of these people the double bird. I've seen some people out there already saying, I've sat in my seats for decades. We have a whole block of friends and friendships we've made over the years. I can't do that to them. I can't have Michigan fans sitting in the middle of all those friends I've made in my season ticket area. I can't wait till those people show up Saturday and they're surrounded by maize and blue because their friends that they were so worried about were not worried in the least about them. Mm-mm. Be selfish. It's okay. It's your property. Sell them. Sell them to Michigan. Sell them to Walmart Wolverines. Whatever.
Yeah. If everybody's selfish together, then nobody's selfish because it's going to be all Michigan fans.
And really, is it selfish if you're doing it to send a message to the people in charge at Michigan State? No, that's actually selfless because you want better for the program.
And it takes a portion of your soul to do that. So really, you're giving something up.
You know what, Dr. J? That was a nice way of putting it. This is actually, by selling your Michigan State season tickets to the Michigan game to Michigan fans, you are actually committing an act of altruism of the highest order.
Yes.
I don't know that there's a more humanitarian thing you can do.
There really isn't.
If you're upset by what you see in Israel and Palestine, sell your Michigan State season tickets to the Michigan game to Michigan fans. Let that be the way you support whomever you support in that.
Oh, boy.
But seriously, use this as an opportunity to let them know how you feel. Look,
peaceful protest.
Here's what I think is going to happen. I don't know how many, but there is going to be a considerable blue and yellow tint to the seats Saturday night. And it ain't going to be hard to see. I kind of hope that that alone is enough. Lions fans have been doing this all season. They've taken over opposing team stadiums. They did it again yesterday in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, they sure did.
I would like to see something like that happen this weekend, and I think it will. And I would like to see Michigan State's leadership use that as a launching point to get things right. That's the only positive I can see coming out of this, because I don't know who needs to hear this. There ain't no chance of the upset this weekend. And the sooner you divorce yourself of that myth, the better off you will be mentally and emotionally. There is just no chance, guys. None. I don't want to hear it's a rivalry game. Throw out the record. No. Mm-hmm. I've done some digging, too. Best I can tell, this is the first time these two will play where Michigan State has an interim head coach. That has never happened before, as best I can tell. I don't know if that means anything, but...
No. I think it's... Oh, it's going to be bad. The worst thing that could happen is if State looks like they have a pulse. That would be worse. Because then you have hope for a little while.
Yeah.
And then it's crushed. I don't want that. I want no hope from the beginning.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Like State... Like last year. Like, it goes to halftime and, you know, State has been ahead for a few minutes. And they go to the half just down three. And then the floodgates open in the second half.
I don't want that. I want them to lose spectacularly from the beginning.
Yeah, let's just have this. Let's make sure this turns into right away what we all know it's eventually going to turn into. For everyone's sake.
Because then you don't have to put on the lucky hats. You don't have to, you know, have any sort of hope going into it. You just know what's going to happen.
I got something for people here. For those, again, I don't know who needs to hear this. But I know there are some of you out there who are, you're just clinging to the hope and I guess somewhat whatever sliver of belief, no matter how misguided, that State has a chance, a serious, realistic chance to score an upset win over Michigan this Saturday. Don't take it from me. Take it from Michigan State. They know there's no chance of that happening. And you know how I know that? Because Michigan State men's basketball today announced that at 2 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, there's a free scrimmage you can attend at the Breslin Center. Doors open at 2. The scrimmage starts at 2:30. It's the green and white game for Michigan State men's basketball. Admission is free. And they're intentionally putting that as a sort of appetizer to the football game. Do you know why? Izzo said it himself. Last week, he said he feels pressure to deliver something positive to the Michigan State community because of how bad things have been lately.
That's so funny.
They're giving you free admission to a green and white scrimmage Saturday at 2:30 before the football game, because they're that worried about how bad your mental health is going to be after Michigan completes what we all know that they're going to complete here on Saturday evening.
Oh, boy.
Don't take that from me. The writing is on the wall, and it is in big block letters and highlighted.
Thank you, Tom Izzo. Thank you for trying to save us.
All right, so let me go to break, but we'll just kind of put a bow on it. Here's how it goes today. Studs and duds, of course. And then... looking forward, if you want to call it that, to Saturday night. Seriously, can you remember, have you ever experienced a rivalry week with less anticipation than this one. Can you remember a Michigan State-Michigan game that had less buzz or enthusiasm around it? I'm struggling to find one. Many of you have been around a lot longer than me. I would be interested to hear what you have to say, because I'm sure there are some from back in those wandering the desert years of probation in the 70s that were quite grim. Here are all the ways to weigh in. Go ahead, Dr. J.
Have you ever felt more dread? That's what I want to know. Not anticipation, because I think that's the wrong word. Have you ever felt more dread going into a Michigan-Michigan State football game?
I felt dread when you first started talking, and it sounded like you just finished a carton of Marble Reds.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something going on with my voice today. Oh, well.
All right, here are all the ways to weigh in on that. Like Dr. J rephrased it, have you ever felt more dread about the Michigan game than you do this week? And also Studs and Duds, your chance to win a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House in downtown Lansing. 517-300-4263. You can dial it up. You can email us, beanie@wvfnam.com. You can use Facebook. Send us a message or post a comment there. Search Facebook for The Game 730 AM. Or use the free Game 730 AM app. Click chat in the main menu. Sends over a free text message to us. Back in a couple. Offensive Minded, I'm Beanie. This is The Game 730 AM.
The Michigan State Spartan football team is back for another season on the Lansing Sports Network. The Big Talker 1240 WJIM and Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ. Never miss another touchdown or tackle again. Stream the game in the free Lansing Sports Network app, powered by Whitelaw PLLC, MSU Healthcare, Schupan and Sons, Gravity Smokehouse, Doubting Industries, and Chandler's Top Shelf.
Get your Detroit Lions pregame fix all season with nachos and kneecaps. The Lansing area's very own local Detroit Lions tailgate show. Presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason. Join yours truly, Beanie, from Offensive Minded on The Game 7:30 a.m. and Brock Palmbush every week about 2 hours before kickoff. We cover all the Lions angles, player availability, matchups, outrageous Dan Campbell in-game decisions and audio, local ski mask tales, and everything else. Nachos and kneecaps, presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason, is also brought to you by Miller Lite. On Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ and The Game 7:30 a.m.
Could you imagine the MLB pitch clock rule for The Game 7:30 a.m.? I mean, we would have to talk faster in order to...
You're out!
And we're back. Okay, it's a Studs and Duds edition of the program here, like it is every Monday on Offensive Minded. A chance for you to win a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House of downtown Lansing. To get in that random drawing, all you have to do is nominate one good and one bad performance from the weekend that was in sports. And then also, it's rivalry week, but man, it sure doesn't feel like it. Feels more like funeral week. And with that in mind, we're asking you, as Dr. J rephrased it so eloquently, Can you think of a Michigan-Michigan State game where you were less enthused? Not that. Can you think of a Michigan-Michigan State game that you dreaded more the week of than this one? Here are all the ways to weigh in on either of those, or both. 517-300-4263. You can email us, beanie@wvfnam.com. Facebook, search Facebook for The Game 730 AM to post a comment or send a message, or use the free Game 730 AM app. Click chat in the main menu, sends over a free message to us. I'll go out to the phone lines for Ray and Holt. Hi, Ray.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How was Midnight Madness? You were supposed to give me a report on that.
Yeah, I was going to give you a report. I was going to say it was awesome. We had a 20-month-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old with us. They walked around, got some candy, didn't get too much candy. They had cheerleaders, they had dance team, they had all kinds of people passing out candy. The Spartan marching band different, and then they started in the night about 9, and they had the Spartan band, the cheerleading team, they had the dance team out there, and then they introduced the players, and they had the gals introduced first. And then without the coaches being introduced, and then they had all the guys introduced, and they were all dressed in different costumes. And then lo and behold, Tom Izzo and Robin Fraley came out, the guy and girls basketball coach, and it was Batman and Robin. And
right, because so her name's Robin, right?
I know, since it was Robin, I thought that's pretty interesting. And then they had some dunk competition, which Cohen Carr ended up winning, but there was some big time on that.
Wow, Ray, I feel like I was there. You're giving me such a comprehensive breakdown.
I wrote all this down to give you.
Oh, my gosh. You don't have to do that. I appreciate it, though.
You know, you said give it to you, and I was going to give it to you. Now, when you talk about MSU and this weekend, I feel that Dr. J is probably right. It's sad that she is, but after Saturday and watching the punt and then the kickoff afterwards, I totally blame the coaches. You have to have your guys prepared. I mean, why do you not call a fair catch on the kickoff? Instead of letting the guy come down and just take it away from you.
Yeah.
And on the punt, as you said, them having a guy leaving the team, that then all of a sudden, I mean, even later in the game, there was a punt that was hiked real high and the punter ended up jumping and catching it, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't another thing like that. But when you see all that happening, you just, I mean, I thought they could have the game won, and I kept thinking, don't think that until it's done, and then it wasn't. So, of course, if you're talking about my studs and duds, my stud would be the Lions, and my dud would be MSU football team after what happened to them and everything. And they just, I'm afraid it could be a 50-point difference or more. I'm surprised the line is what it is right now, but it just does not look good for MSU, and
nope.
MSU does anything to make them look like they belong. I mean, I just figure it'd be a high school team playing a pro team or college team that just doesn't even look like they belong on the same field as they are.
Yeah, I'm with you, and thanks for the call, Ray. Yeah, I know. It's awful. It sucks. But, it's reality. Gotta own it. Thanks, Ray. You're in the drawing. Mm. You know, let's talk more about that, about the point differential, because obviously the line is up to 24.5 at many books right now. It might keep going up. I wouldn't be surprised. I want to talk about that on the other side, because I think there's some interesting, let's just say there's something to chew on there, betting-wise, okay? And I do love huge spreads that involve Michigan, because especially in this game, because it's usually, not always, but it's usually a pretty solid way to make money. We'll get into that and more after this break. It's offensive. Oh, actually, you know what? Let me read some digital ones before I get out. Go to the free game 7:30 a.m. app where Joaquin's Beard in East Lansing says, dud MSU special teams coach Ross Ells, who should have been fired immediately after Saturday's meltdown. Stud, Detroit Lions receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown for making 12 catches for 124 yards in Sunday's win over Tampa Bay. He made some difficult catches to keep drives alive and often extended plays with excellent running after the catch. He's as good as Golden Tate in his prime. Yeah, and also half of the jackass that he was. Amon-Ra is easy to root for. Golden Tate's a jerk. Not that that matters. Thanks, man. You're in the drawing. Hobbs and Puamo says, not to mention Beanie getting an illegal formation on a punt and making your punter punt again in these conditions, you can get high schoolers to line up correctly on a punt. Yeah, and that's a good point, Hobbs. I appreciate that. And it's not like it was a deafening environment. That place was empty. And really, at one point, it sounded like there were more State fans there than Rutgers fans. I think that's why Rutgers started so slow. They ran out and it felt like a road game. It had to be a letdown emotionally for them. It's Offensive Minded. I'm Beanie. This is the game, 7:30 a.m. Back after these words.
WWBFN, East Lansing, a Town Square media station. The game, 7:30 a.m. Lansing's only sports station.
Hi, my name is
Kyle. From Mud Ice Arena to Little Caesars Arena, we've got the sports opinions that matter to you. From the Driven Collision Studios, we make friends by accident. On the game, 7:30 a.m.
And we're back. Sorry about that. Got away from me. I apologize. But this is Offensive Minded, and I'm Beanie here on the game, 7:30 a.m. It's a Studs and Duds edition of the program. You know how that works. A chance for you to win a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House of downtown Lansing just by nominating one good and one bad performance from the weekend that was in sports. On top of that, we also have, you know, the main topic du jour, aside from that promotional element, which is, look, can you think of a Michigan State game that you dreaded more? Because it's hard for me to find one. It's hard for Dr. J to identify one. Let's go out to the phones. 517-300-4263. Dan in Delta Township. How you doing, man? Dan, are you? Oh, hold on. Let's try that. Sorry, Dan. My bad. Are you there?
I am here, Brandon. Sorry, I couldn't get through for a few minutes there.
Apologize for that, but go ahead. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm going to go with the duds first. The fourth quarter, showing by our Spartans, and then the studs were the Lions yesterday. I didn't actually see very much of the Lions game, and then if I can elaborate on the Spartans for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, back in the old days, I don't know if the rules have changed or not, but when you were a team was ahead, let's say by more than four, if the punter fumbles or, you know, has a hard time handling the punt, I thought in the old days as a punter, you were trained to not try to recover that punt, but to basically kick it out of the end zone, so that way you were giving up a safety versus giving up a touchdown. Are the rules the same, or have the rules on that changed?
No, there's no rule prohibiting that, not at all. And in fact, you don't even have to kick it. He could in theory just like push it out of bounds with his hand, right? Like swat it out of bounds, or just fall on it in the end zone. You're right; that'd be the better idea.
Yeah, because with that raining, hindsight is 20/20. He should have just kicked it out of the end zone to give up the two versus giving up the seven. And then the other part of your question, I've only been a Spartan fan since the fall of '95, so not my whole life. But I remember back in 2002, it ended up being Bobby Williams' last game. I don't think there was a lot of dread per se before that game in Ann Arbor. I just remember there was a lot of apathy more than dread, if that makes sense, because Michigan was a good team that year, but they weren't a great team like they are this year.
Wait, which year again were you talking about?
2002.
Yeah, the 49-3 one, right. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. The apathy was pretty high. What do you think about this year? Does it feel apathetic like that? Because I'm not sensing that because, you know, they're going to make a coaching hire. So if any, you know what, maybe that kind of like lessens it because we know the season is lost and they're starting over.
Yeah. And then what I'm looking for, a couple of thoughts came to my mind as far as a coach, not necessarily a name, but as far as I'm looking, I want someone with head coaching experience, but I'm looking at some metrics. I want someone at their teams, whether they've been a head coach or their positions, if they've been previously a position coach before being a head coach, I want somebody that's got a good, like excellent turnovers and lack thereof turnovers. And I want someone that's, low penalty team. That's some metrics I want.
All right, man. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Before I get back to the calls and stuff here, I have something I need to dive into, Dr. J, and this is of the utmost exigence, I believe, because this is a breaking news bulletin I'm just seeing come across all of the different, publications and social media sphere and MSU Twitter. Very relevant to stuff we've been talking about. A headline out of the Knoxville News Sentinel. Urban Meyer, quote, no desire, unquote, to coach again despite Michigan State football rumors. So apparently, Urban Meyer was... What's wrong, Dr. J? You have a sour look on your face.
I just wanted Urban Meyer.
Well, hang on. Let me read you from the story. This is written by Mike Wilson, a Michigan State alum who used to cover Michigan State for 247sports.com. Also a fellow classmate of mine back in the School of Journalism at Michigan State University back in like 2000. I think we both graduated the same year, so 2010. Anyway, I'll read you from his story here a little bit. Urban Meyer is not interested in returning to coach football, the three-time national championship coach said Monday. Quote, no desire, Meyer said at the Knoxville Quarterback Club. Meyer, who has not coached since 2021 and has not coached in college since 2018, is working as an analyst for Fox Sports. His name still surfaced in regards to college openings, including the Notre Dame opening last year or 2 years ago, and more recently, the Michigan State opening. The question that prompted Meyer's answer did not specify a particular job. Meyer has been rumored as a possible candidate for the Michigan State vacancy following Mel Tucker's firing. Quote, I am good. I never really took a day off. People, when I say that, they scratch their head. I'm like, I never took a day off. I had some health stuff go on. I became addicted to sleeping pills. I was just a maniac worker. So no desire, unquote. Well, there you have it from the horse's mouth. Is that enough for you? Dr. J, is that enough for you?
No, we need him, please.
I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, the problem is I've seen so many coaches do that before and say they're not interested in this or that. He didn't even say a specific job. He just said in general, he's not interested in going back to coaching. Now, what changes it for me, I think normally I would just say, don't believe that for a second, because this has happened so many times before, even with him. Like a week before he was introduced in Columbus, he was still telling the media that none of that was happening, that that wasn't true. So I would say take it with a grain of salt. The difference is, though, I've never heard him talk about a sleeping pill addiction before and calling himself a maniacal worker or maniac worker. Those kind of make it sound a little more serious to me. But, hey, you know, I don't know what to tell you. If you're someone who is like urban or bust, I think that's probably a bad position to take anyway. I get why you would want him. I would like Michigan State to hire him too, because he's a proven winner. I understand the appeal of that. But I'll have to work some back channels here myself and see what Michigan State's, you know, mega donors think about that. I would be very interested. I'll be interested to hear their reaction to that. Okay. So just putting it out there, you can react to it however you want. You can read between the lines and tell me if you think there's any subliminal message there. I'm inclined to take the man at his word, to be honest with you. Aren't you, Dr. J? I mean, I know people don't believe him about his health issues, but he's talking about being addicted to sleeping pills, you know, and he's talking about not enjoying that lifestyle anymore, which is, like D'Antonio said, you can't be half in. You can't even be 95% in. You have to be all in to be a college football coach.
Yeah, I would have to believe him and say that our hopes are destroyed now. Thank you, Urban Meyer. You have killed any last remaining hope I had.
But here's the thing, and I would tell you this, no matter who the candidate is you may be in love with, if they tell you no. So for everyone out there like Dr. J who's feeling dejected because it was Urban Meyer or bust, it's fine to be disappointed, especially when one of the greatest coaches of all time that you thought you had a shot at says no. I get that. But there isn't only just one person who could do the job. There are still a ton of candidates out there. Are there any as good as him? Probably not. But also, you know, it's not the end of the world. You can find a good football coach. And now, like, if what I've been told and so many others have reported is true, that the mega billionaires, the mega donors were really pushing hard for him and they were willing to commit the kind of money necessary to get him, meaning, you know, $12 million at least a year in salary alone. Well, now you could go and get someone who maybe isn't one of the best college football coaches of all time, but who's a good coach, and you can save $3-4 million off the salary and put that toward NIL, which might be more important now. I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying it's worth looking into. Like, the formula, I think, is a little different now that you can buy players. I really do. I think that has changed things a lot. That's not to say, and don't get it twisted. If you're asking me straight up, out of all of the available people, who do I think would deliver Michigan State success the fastest? Urban Meyer. Yeah, I totally do. even with NIL and transfer portal that he's never had to deal with. But I do think there are more than one people who could do the job. I don't think anyone could do it as fast or as perhaps as, you know, at an elite level like him. But I think there are lots of other guys out there who will be interested in the opportunity, if only because how much money Michigan State has proven it's willing to spend. So keep that in mind. 517-300-4263. Caller, you're on the air. Who is this?
Joaquin's Beard.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, a guy that just called a few minutes ago partially stole my thunder about the 2002 season. I want to refresh your memory on that. Remember that Jeff Smoker got suspended and missed, I don't know, the last four or five games because of smoke green, snort white, or something like that.
Yep.
And so Damon Dowdell, the backup quarterback, was in there. Far as feeling dread and low expectations, that's what we felt going into Ann Arbor. It was 49-3. And then remember the fiasco at Penn State, 61-7. Larry Johnson, 279 yards and four touchdowns. And I don't think that what will happen this weekend will be nearly that bad. Excuse me, because I don't think that this Michigan team is as prolific on offense as that Penn State team. And I don't think the Spartan team is as horrible on defense as the 2002 team. And here people will say I'm a Kool-Aid drinker. We're going to lose without a doubt. But think of it this way. On the road against two teams that were considered to have good defenses, we moved the ball pretty well, and Hauser is a lot better than people thought he would be. So I think we can put a few points on the board against Michigan, and I don't know how much they're going to run it up because they risk injuring their starters if they try to score 60, you know. So it may not be as big a debacle as you fear, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I may make one real quick question on Kim versus, or make one quick comment, Kim versus Hauser. Why did Kim beat him out? Is it possible that Kim was more of a brown noser and easy to manage and the coaches loved him, and that Hauser was not afraid to speak his mind and ruffle feathers, and they thought he was a pain in the rear and they didn't want to reward him for his behavior? It's just a theory that I have. I don't have any proof that it happened, but what else could explain Kim getting the starting job, you know?
All right, man. Well, hey, good stuff. I appreciate the call, and you're already in the drawing from your message, so thanks. I haven't heard that, and I feel like if you're in the media here, you hear stuff like that. If Caden Hauser was this huge, like, problem child and not as big of a, you know, kiss-ass type, we would know that. Now, I'm not saying I'm the most connected guy, but I haven't heard that. And there are people I know who I regularly hear from who are the most connected people, and they haven't heard that. So I doubt it's that. I think they probably just felt safer because he was, you know, he had more experience. Even though Caden Hauser was their guy, this staff, you know, this was this coach's first big quarterback get. So regardless, they have him now. In general, by the way, when we come back after break, Dr. J will talk about this, because I want to go over the point spread and some historical trends in the margin of victory here. It's at 24.5 in most books now. The line is Michigan laying 24.5 here. In general, in this game, when Michigan is, well, they're almost always favored, you almost always are better off picking State to cover, because the point spreads are inflated. Michigan's fan base is one of, if not the biggest, and it regularly artificially inflates their point spreads. It's why Michigan statistically over the last 30 years is one of the very worst at covering the spread. Not because they're a bad team. That's obviously not true. They're one of the best programs consistently over that 30 years. But it's because their lines are blown out of proportion by their fans betting on them, because their fan base is so big. You know, this happens to a lot of schools. But keep that in mind. And when we go over the trends here, obviously, you know, is it wild to think Michigan is four touchdowns better than Michigan State? No, of course not. They're a bona fide national championship contender, and State can't stop tripping over its own you know what. Of course that could happen. But there is the rivalry game factor, and for whatever reason, there have been worse teams than this for Michigan State against really good Michigan teams, national title contending Michigan teams. State has not lost by that kind of margin. We'll go over that in a few minutes. Let me take at least one more call if I can work that in. Michael, is that you?
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, Mike. What's up?
Well, for my stud, I'll take the Lions. They look pretty good. You know, Tampa Bay, I think we're 4-1 or 3-1, something like that. And Okay. Kudos to all the Lions fans there, because there was a field of blue out there. It's a lot of Lions fans. You know, I'm sure some of them are transplants. Mm-hmm. And then my dud would be Colorado. Blowing a 29-point lead at halftime.
Yeah.
And losing it in overtime in Colorado.
Just brutal. I watched the end of that game. Stanford has been one of the very worst Power 5 teams over the last few years, too. Stanford had lost 16 of 17 Pac-12 games. And Colorado let them come back from 29-0 down over the course of, you know, the back half of that game, including letting that receiver get loose for almost 300 yards receiving, including one of the most circus highlight reel catches I've seen this year, where he caught it over Travis Hunter's head and against it there and over. That was just wild. Anything else before I let you go, Mike?
No, that was definitely a good game. And then I did go to Sexton and Portland. And let me tell you, Portland, they look playoff ready.
No kidding.
They are ready to go. They looked really good. Watch that Portland team, because they're definitely very well coached.
All right, man. Thanks for the call. Yeah, I think what was it? 41-0. That was the game of the week here Friday on the game, 7:30 a.m. Yeah, 41-0, Portland at Sexton. Handing Sexton its first loss in a huge way. They're just dominant. Brock told me Portland has running clocked everyone this year. That's impressive. That's impressive. Everyone talks about like Ithaca over here and DeWitt, and deservedly so. But hey, Portland has a national. Portland has a state title not that long ago, and they are consistently excellent every year. It's just they're a smaller school, so it doesn't sell as much. But hey, you ask the other coaches around here, and they'll mention John Navarre as one of the best. And that's one of the best high school football programs around. One more call. It's our buddy Aaron in Olivet College, or Olivet University, sorry. Hi, Aaron. Long time, no talk.
Yeah, hello. So for studs and duds this week, I have selected to choose the Lions. Although I did call a high school football game Friday.
Which one?
It was Charlotte and Eaton Rapids, and I will say Charlotte went off. It was 56-6 by the time that was done.
Mm-hmm. They're good, too, but that's another team. Didn't Portland whoop up on Charlotte, too, and they're really good?
And then my dud has got to be Caleb Williams for his performance against Notre Dame.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Throwing it to the Irish.
No kidding. One interception on the season coming in, and they threw three to Notre Dame in that game. They just had his number. And then, SC, no defense either. How about that?
Yeah. And then the Michigan State game, that's not going to really be very much of anything.
Do you have Michigan covering 24.5?
If we can stay out of our own head, no.
Yeah, it's hard for me to see, too. But all right,
but
man.
That's our biggest instinct killer, is we have no killer instinct. That's what that game was against Rutgers. We had no killer instinct, and we let them come right back and take it from us.
Hard to argue. Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. No killer instinct, but I'll tell you what state does have killer stink. Just killer stink surrounding the entire program. I need Vincent Price from Thriller. The stench of 40,000 years. That's what Michigan State football smells like. Back after this, it's Offensive Minded on the game, 7:30 a.m.
There's only one station in Lansing that you've depended on for sports for over 30 years. Some call us by our government-given name of WVFN East Lansing. You can call us by the name the people of Lansing know us by, and that name is The Game, 7:30 a.m. Start your weekday morning with the Dean of Sports, Tim Stout. Middays with Mike Greenberg. Offensive Minded with Beanie Howell. And The Huge Show with Bill Simonson. We're a force to be reckoned with. We're Lansing's only sports station. The Game, 7:30 a.m.
Got a hot take?
Pick up the phone and start dialing.
Offensive-minded phone lines are open.
517-300-4263. And we're back. It's a Studs and Duds edition of the program. Per usual, our Monday tradition, a chance for you to win a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House downtown Lansing just by nominating one good and one bad performance from the weekend that was in sports, okay? And we're also asking you, can you remember dreading a Michigan game more than this one? Let me go to the free game 7:30 a.m. app, which you can download for free in the Apple App Store or Google Play. And if you just click chat in the main menu, it'll send over a free message to you. But let's see. Hobbs in Pomo says, I dreaded 2002, first time I've ever turned off an MSU U of M game. That was the infamous 49-3, where afterward, was it Mickey York, of who's now at Valley Sports in Detroit, asked Bobby Williams, have you lost this team? And he said, I don't know. And that got him fired just a few hours later. I mean, he was going to get fired anyway, but that just sped it up. Can someone ask Harlan Barnett that ASAP? Can we ask every coach whether they've lost the team so we can get these guys out of there? Not that it would make an appreciable difference, but, you know, I don't know. I'm just bitter. John Freeberg, the mayor of Holt, he messages in through the free game 7:30 a.m. app. Stud Lions. Duds, MSU's coaches and players. Well, okay. I mean, yeah, fine. Of course. But I would blame the coaches more. And that's not to say, you know, the players aren't culpable. But, I mean, some of the coaching decisions and mistakes in these games, they've been fireable offenses. The thing is, though, like, why would you fire an interim guy in season just to bring in another interim guy? That's the only thing saving many of these clowns' hides. 517-300-4263. Caller, you on the air. Who is it?
The water is deep and the shed is woody. Sam from Mason.
At least we have the Lions.
Yes, we do. And they're my studs. And those guys in green, or actually in white the other day, are my duds.
Can you, and you've been around a while, can you remember a Michigan game that you dreaded more than this one, or were less excited about, or however you want to quantify it?
I think this is pretty close to the top as far as a dread. I think maybe the first year with Perlis, years ago, State lost 42-0 at Spartan Stadium. But the worst loss that I can think of, which was before my Planet Ride began, was 1947, the first year for who I call the greatest coach in Michigan State football history, Bee Munn. Mm-hmm. Got beat 55-0 at the Big House, his first year. And he said, this is never going to happen again as long as I'm coach. And he had the best winning percentage of any coach in history of Michigan State, Biggie Munn did.
Mm.
He didn't coach for a long time, but he had the best winning percentage. And by the way, the number two coach in my mind was Duffy Doherty. And not, I put Coach D third. I know he has the most wins, but he had the most watered-down schedules.
No kidding.
Duffy Doherty didn't play Eastern, Central, Western Michigan, didn't play Furman, Richmond, some of these other schools, that Florida Atlantic. They never played those schools.
Mm-hmm.
They played all credible opponents for the whole time that he was coach. And so, in my mind, he's number two, and Biggie Munn is number one, and Coach D is number three.
Okay. I got no problem with that. That makes sense to me. Biggie Munn, you mentioned the first one. They lost 55-0. They lost two more in a row to Michigan, 13-7 and 7-3. But then he closed out his run with Michigan State, winning four in a row over Michigan, including three of them in Ann Arbor.
Yeah, I regard him as the greatest because he brought Michigan State into the fold as a big-time football program back in the 40s and 50s. And it was actually a big growth period of the school itself when Dr. Hanna was president. And
right.
It just, you know, I grew up quite a bit. Like I said, he was before my time, before I was on the planet. But, I was a student at MSU I wasn't. Duffy was out in 72 when I was still in high school. But I went to a lot of games probably starting out when I was about 5 years old, which would be about 1960. I can remember that far back. My older brothers went to MSU, and my middle brother actually had classes with some of those 60s players like Clint Jones. And, that was the teams that I remember the greatest teams that Michigan State had were the 65, 66 teams that Duffy Doherty had. Those are the greatest teams. They're full of NFL players.
Yeah.
And I'm going to name drop Dick Butkus. I know he passed away a week or so ago, but I saw him play when I was 8 years old in Spartan Stadium. And, makes me feel kind of old here when I mention
that. Well, that's
that,
okay. That's what I would say, experienced. Call it experienced. Yeah. Last thing, Sam, with Urban Meyer saying he's not interested, I don't know where you felt, how you felt about that. But your reaction to that, and I guess who do you think should be the number one target for MSU?
I like the guy from Washington, to be honest with you. I mean, they're going to be part of the Big Ten. Or the guy from Oregon State. He's a young guy, too, that's up and coming.
The problem with him, though, is Jonathan Smith, is he played quarterback there. He's an Oregon State guy, and I don't know if he's ever left the state of Oregon even on a vacation. You know what I mean? Not that that matters that much anymore because, recruiting can be done with money now out in the open. I don't know. Don't you want someone with a little more, diversity of experience? Because at least Kalen DeBoer has been all over the country. He's coached in South Dakota, at Fresno State. He's coached at Indiana and Washington.
Yeah, I like Kalen DeBoer real well. As far as Urban Meyer goes, I part of me would like him, and part of me is a little bit nervous about him. I mean, either way. I mean, he's a great coach. He's on the older side. I think we do need to have a guy that's, this side of 50 years old.
I tend to agree. Yes.
Hopefully.
Yes. I would like someone 50 or younger, ideally. Now, you can make exceptions to that for certain people, sure. All right, Sam, thanks for the call. You're in the drawing. Appreciate it, man. I got to leave it there. Let me hit the last break. I promise on the other side I'm going to get to these betting numbers and stuff. It'll be worth it. Hang on. Offensive Minded, I'm Beanie. This is the Game, 7:30 a.m.
Get your Detroit Lions pregame fix all season with nachos and kneecaps. The Lansing area's very own local Detroit Lions tailgate show. Presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason. Join yours truly, Beanie from Offensive Minded on the game 7:30 a.m. and Brock Palmbush every week about 2 hours before kickoff. We cover all the Lions angles, player availability, matchups, outrageous Dan Campbell in-game decisions and audio, local ski mask sales, and everything else. Nachos and kneecaps, presented by Momentum Health Center in Mason, is also brought to you by Miller Lite. On Classic Rock 94.9 MMQ and the game 7:38.
Back to the best in sports talk now. On the only station serving Lansing with the best sports talk for 30 years. The game 7:30 a.m.
Hey, listen, if Urban Meyer really has no interest, he's going to have to tell it to my heart. Just not going to believe it till he tells it to my heart. Dr. J, do you think that's a fair statement?
I think that's fair.
No, seriously, here's the actual response I have. I don't tend to believe anything these coaches say when they say this stuff because I've seen it happen too many times, including with him. But also, like, dude, if you're not interested, why not just come out and address the elephant in the room? Like, hey, I appreciate it. I'm flattered. And I like the people I've talked to at Michigan State, but I'm not interested. Just say that, and it goes away. Now, there could be, I'm not saying the reason he hasn't is because he is interested in the Michigan State job. No, there could be a ton of other reasons. Specifically, he's getting free publicity out of this, which he could very well be using as a sort of smoke signal to drive up interest from other programs who may or may not have openings here soon. I'm specifically talking about the likes of Texas A&M, like a big job like that, right? This is a way to kind of market yourself. Keep that in mind. That could be going on as well. Also, I mean, I'm just talking about what's theoretically possible. Again, I don't want anyone to think I've been told this from some pie-in-the-sky, uber-connected source. That's not the case, what I'm about to say. But it could also be a negotiating tactic, right? It could be his way of telling Matt Ishbia, I hear you, but I'm going to need a couple more zeros to make this happen. Could be. I don't know. Generally, I am a subscriber to Occam's Razor, which says that the simplest solution is often the correct one. So I never really thought this would happen. Like so many others, I have been told by very reliable sources that he was here 2 weeks ago talking about the job with them, and I believe those people and the others who have reported it as well. But, I mean, I've done that. I've interviewed at jobs I wasn't really interested in. Most people have, right? Like, that doesn't mean anything. I never thought it was going to happen. And I think I told you guys on air I would peg it at less than 10%. And again, my bigger takeaway from it is you got to have more than one guy in mind anyway. You know, it's you can't go into a search looking for just one guy unless you already know that dude is, like, pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered. Like Michigan did with Harbaugh. Of course he was their only candidate. Well, he was a native son. It was a matter of just getting the details right. That's not the case with Michigan State and Urban Meyer. Anyway, keep that in mind. We'll talk more about it as it transpires, because I don't think we're done with this story just yet. Maybe we are, but I don't think so. I did want to get to this before we get out today. The line for the game for Michigan coming here on Saturday opened at 23.5 and is up to 24.5 at many books. And, you know, you've probably heard a ton of media types projecting a, you know, 4+ touchdown differential, which I'm not denying is explicitly possible because Michigan is really good and State is really bad. And I would caution you not to get overstimulated by Caton Hauser's, you know, pretty nice debut, because keep in mind he made some mistakes that maybe if it's not raining or maybe if it's just a hair different, you know, he ends that game looking just as bad, if not worse, than Noah Kim has, throwing at least a couple of interceptions, you know, maybe losing a fumble or two, stuff like that, right? You can be, like, encouraged, like you have something to work with him, but I hope you're not coming away thinking he's just going to light it up against Michigan, because he ain't. He's still, you know, a redshirt freshman, and this is one of the best defenses in the country with a few NFL players. So it definitely has all the hallmarks of something that can get out of control. Now, generally, you know, rivalry games are contested hotly, and Michigan State has proven that over the series here. Like I heard last week, media types already saying, like, oh, this is going to be 4+ touchdowns. I wonder, like, before people run their mouth on stuff like that, do they do any look into the history or the data? And the reason I say that is, again, I'm saying it's explicitly possible, if not likely, Michigan wins or covers here, which is 24.5 points. I believe that is very possible and, in fact, somewhat likely. But do you realize they haven't won by that margin since 1985? That was the last time Michigan won by that big of a spread. Since then, the largest margin of victory they've had here came in 1991 when they won by 17 points. So from 1986 and onward, Michigan has won here. I think their record at Spartan Stadium is 8-9. And in the 8 wins, their average margin of victory comes by 9.1 points. I went and did the math. I'll just read you the point differentials in their last 8 wins here, dating back to 1989, starting with the most recent, 2019. 14 points in 2016 was a 9-point win. In 2007, it was a 4-point win. 2005, 3-point win. 2003, 7-point win. 97, 16-point win. 91, 17-point win. And 89, 3-point win. Now, there have been some special, and I mean special, Michigan State football teams over that span. And they haven't lost by 25 or more points. And there have been some really good Michigan teams, like, you know, the 97 team that won half a national championship came in here and only won by 17. Or 16, rather. Now, State wasn't nearly as god-awful then, I don't think, as they are now. But just something to ponder, man. Like, so many people are going to be eager to just to say, oh, this is going to be 63-7. Well, that hasn't happened. I just gave you the numbers. And by the way, like, betting on State to cover in this series is historically a smart bet. Since 2000, only 7 of 23 games played between these two have been decided by 2 or more scores. Also since 2000, Michigan has beaten MSU by 3 or more points, by 3 or more scores just twice. And since 1977, you know how many times Michigan has beaten MSU by 23 or more points since 1977? 5 times in 46 games. That's about 10% of the time. Doesn't mean it's not possible. Clearly it is. I'm just saying the numbers show that's not likely. Keep that in mind as you place your bets here. I don't know. I don't think it would take much to make the wheels come off this cart on Saturday. I haven't officially decided how I'm going to play that line yet, but I will. I'm just saying it's not a lock since that they're going to completely come in here and drop a 49-0 victory. It just doesn't work that way in this history of this rivalry. And there have been worse State teams and better Michigan teams. One more message in the free game 7:30 a.m. app from Mark in Mason. He says, stud, Mason Bulldogs varsity football winning the number 1 versus number 2 team in Division 3 matchup. Dud, MSU football coaching staff giving up 18 points in the fourth quarter. Horrendous. Hard to argue. Right? I'll do the drawing real quick, but I'm not going to give any production value. I'm running low on time. But I'll tell you, today's winner of the Studs and Duds drawing and a $25 gift certificate to the Nut House of downtown Lansing is Hobbs in Pawama. Well done, Hobbs. contact you afterward, get you all squared away there. Thanks, Dr. J, for being here. Have a wonderful evening.
You too.
Everyone else, we'll see you tomorrow at 4. Until then, be safe and be good.